You guys can go ahead and open up to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25 is where we're going to be. All right, Matthew chapter 25. We are back in the book of Matthew. Last week we picked back up and we are right smack in the middle of what is known as the Olivet Discourse. The Olivet Discourse. If you were here last week, then you know that that means we're talking about the end of the world. That's really what Jesus is talking about. And if you were here last week, you know that what we covered so far can be really confusing. It covers a lot of ground. There's a lot of different interpretations of it. There's a lot of pieces to it that are very complicated. And the reason for that is because he's dealing with the future. And so it's impossible for us to be able to look forward to something and say, hey, he's talking about the future, and here's exactly how it's going to happen, because we can't verify any of that. And so I tried my best last week to walk through chapter 24, telling you that there's such a wide variety of interpretations. I tried walking you through the way that I understand that text and told you that many of the elders maybe view it in a different way, but today's text in Matthew chapter 25, even though it's still part of the Olivet Discourse, is not nearly as complicated as what we looked at last week. So last week's stuff is complicated. Next week's stuff that we're going to look at is a little bit complicated, a little bit confusing. But this week, the text is pretty straightforward. We got two stories that we're going to look at, two parables that we're going to cover. And I'm going to tell you the takeaway from today's sermon right at the very beginning. Typically, whenever I preach, I will save that toward the end and kind of tie things up. But today, I'm going to tell you right off the bat, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to just kind of come behind that and say, this is how Jesus shows us this. This is how Jesus drives this home. So here's today's takeaway. Here's today's summary for the whole message. There will be a day when the end will come, and you should live your life preparing for that day. There will be a day when the end will come, and you should live your life preparing for that day. Another way to say that is that you should live each day with the last day in mind. You should live each day of your life with the last day in mind. So that's where we're going. That's what we're going to flesh out in these two stories that we're going to cover. And I know what that's like for many of you during a sermon like this. So you hear that and you say, I understand, totally, I get it, but I've taken care of that. I've taken care of my eternity, I've taken care of my future, I've gotten saved, and now that I'm saved, all is well, I've checked that box, I don't have to worry about what it is that you're going to talk about, because this is going to be a sermon about getting saved, and so long as I've been saved, then I'm fine, I can check out, I'll be back in a half hour or so. I've walked an aisle, I've prayed a prayer, I've been baptized, and I've checked that box, I'm good here. Well, the text that we're going to look at today, the stories we're going to look at today, even though they are talking very much about that idea of following Christ and what it means to follow Christ, is very clearly going to go against that idea. That you have checked a box and you are done. Okay? So it's going to go completely against that. So again, the text today will drive us to this. The end will come and you should live your life preparing for that day. Now, that sounds like an easy enough task, right? Okay, that's fine. You know, I can do that. I can think about the future and I can live and kind of base my life around it. That's fine. But there's so much that distracts us from doing that. So many things that war for our attention, that war for our hearts, that are constantly being pushed in front of us. So many things for us that will distract us from living with that last day in mind. For the more visually inclined, I found this picture online this week. This picture went viral. I don't know if you saw it or not, but I think this picture summarizes for us our message. Did you guys see this? It's a little hard to see. I don't know if you can see it because it's kind of dark, but if we could zoom in just a little bit, what you see here is a giant tornado on the horizon, right? And if you can see this guy down here in the corner, you can't really make out his fence. There is a guy mowing his yard. Now, this is a totally legit photo, okay? If you can see it here, this guy down here in the corner is mowing his yard. This is not Photoshopped. This is not anything. This lady stepped out on her porch, and she said, "Look, my husband's getting his to-do list done," snapped a picture with a tornado in the background. Now, I can already tell some of you ladies are elbowing your husband saying, "See, look, he gets his honey-do list done. He gets his stuff taken care of. Why can't you do that kind of thing? If he can do that with a tornado in the background, what's your problem?" So I already know some of you guys are thinking that way, and then some of you other guys are the type A folks, and you're like, "Yeah, I get it, totally. I got to check that box. I got to get that done." And so this guy is mowing his yard. So this has gone viral. It's all over Facebook. I don't know if you saw it or not, but they've interviewed the wife, and she said, and this was her quote, "Yeah, I just saw him out there mowing, and I saw the tornado, so I thought it might be a neat little picture. I was honestly just taking a picture of the tornado, not even paying attention to my husband who was down there mowing. I just thought that it was kind of neat." And then she goes on to say, "The tornado was really moving off in the other direction, so we really didn't have anything to worry about. And it's further away than the picture lets on." Listen, she took this with her iPhone. This was not with like some super zoom, and then you kind of mess around with the background and the foreground and get things looking. She stepped out there on the porch with her phone and took this picture. That's a tornado. Like, I don't care how far it is. If I can see it, it's too close. That's generally my rule. So, but this guy's out there mowing, like I said, totally legit pick. That picture summarizes our message very well today. We'll come back to it here in just a few minutes and kind of tie some things together. But that picture, that's what you can keep in mind for our message today. All right, so we're going to be in Matthew chapter 25. I'm going to read two stories. I'm going to read our first one in verses 1 through 13 right here at the beginning. I'm going to read this and cover this first one, and then we'll keep on going from there. So Matthew chapter 25, verses 1 through 13. "Then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins." I'm going to use bridesmaids here instead of virgins, because it gets really confusing, and you guys know what bridesmaids are, and this is really what they're talking about here. So, "The kingdom of heaven will be like 10 bridesmaids who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, 5 of them were wise. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flask of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. But at midnight there was a cry, 'And here is the bridegroom, come out to meet him.' And then all those bridesmaids rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, 'Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out.' But the wise answered, saying, 'Since there will be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers.'" I'm sorry. I got confused. Where was it? There I am. Okay. "And the foolish said to the wise, 'Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out.' But the wise answered, 'Since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves.' And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him for the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, 'Lord, Lord, open to us.' But he answered, 'Truly I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour.'" So we'll stop there. That's the first story. So what we need to do first, we got to figure out what Jesus is talking about here. Because this is kind of a weird story. It doesn't make any sense to us. We can't really picture what's happening here. You can't, and that's because what's going on here is kind of a cultural thing that Jesus is talking about. The picture that he's given is something unique to their culture, not something that we do today. But basically there's a groom, which represents Jesus in this metaphor. And at the time, weddings had a pretty elaborate structure of the way things happen. So weddings today have kind of a tradition, certain patterns that they follow. Each wedding's a little bit different. But for them, for the most part, they were all going to follow this pattern and this structure of what would happen. They would almost always take place in the same town. There wasn't this, "Hey, this person's from Georgia and this person's from Texas and we'll meet in the middle somewhere, we'll do whatever." Almost always, the husband and wife would be from the same town. And the wedding ceremony itself would typically take place in the evening at the bride's home. Okay, so that's the structure of how this would happen. In the evening at the bride's parents' home. And when it was time for the ceremony to begin, the bridesmaids would come out and kind of line the street between where the groom's house was and the groom's family was, and where the bride and the bride's family was. And so the bridesmaids would kind of line the streets and really kind of form a bit of a procession for the groom to come out to. So they would come out, it's at night, they would have their lanterns lit, they would have everything ready to go to kind of usher the groom to the bride's house. It was their way of kind of coming out and saying, the bride is ready, now you may come. And so they would come out, and then this marriage ceremony would happen. It would kind of set the stage for everything. And then they would have the ceremony. The bride would then go back with the groom to the groom's family's home, and that's where their home would be. So that's the scene that that Jesus is borrowing from to tell this parable. Okay, that's the idea of how all this works. But in this story, it doesn't tell us why. We don't know exactly why. But the groom is delayed from coming. So the bridesmaids come out, and five of the bridesmaids have got their lantern with oil kind of with them just in case. Okay, they were overprepared. They overpacked. I don't know how many people in here are overpackers when you go on vacation. Like, you pack way too much stuff. I am not proud to admit that I am an overpacker, but I totally am. There's overpacking, and then there's my wife, though, who is like closet packing. You know, like, I'm going to bring everything in case the temperature that is forecasted somehow radically drops. I'm going to bring a sweatshirt and everything else, too. So there's overpackers, and then there's the people that go crazy. Well, this is what the bridesmaids have done. Five have come out and they've overpacked. They've overprepared, but they're ready just in case something were to happen. And then there's five others that have come and they've got just enough to get them through what should be the normal course of events for the groom to come. And then for whatever reason, the groom doesn't come when he is supposed to. He is delayed. So the bridesmaids have set this stage, all 10 of them, but after a while, and the groom isn't coming, and you start thinking about different things, you know, does he have cold feet, is there something going on, did he get sick, why is the groom not coming to do this, the bridesmaids kind of get tired. They just get tired. And it's not just the ones that were prepared and the ones that were not, all of them get tired, and they all start to fall asleep, because it's late. So they start to fall asleep, and at this point, the parable is getting a little bit absurd. Like, okay, Jesus, this isn't, I don't think this is really going to happen, but okay, but I'll go with you, and I'll kind of follow you on your story. And so they get tired, and then the lamps go out for all of them. They all kind of put their lamps out, and they run out of oil for five, and the others, their lights are out as well, but they haven't gone in yet. They're still out. The lamps go out and they've decided tonight must not be the night. For whatever reason, the groom has been delayed. And then suddenly, at midnight, the groom decides, now's the time. Now is the time. And there will be a wedding this night after all. Now, midnight is an odd time to get married today, and it would have been then too. So they're just kind of following Jesus' story, and we need to follow Jesus' story too. He's telling this story that is a bit on the absurd side because he's trying to make a point. He's trying to drive some things home. One of those things he's trying to decide is, you wouldn't expect a wedding to happen at midnight, and you're not going to expect me to show up whenever I show back up again. You're not going to expect it. You're not going to know when it's coming. You can't expect it at a certain time. And so that's one of the points that he's trying to make. And so everyone had moved on. Everybody had, the wedding party had fallen asleep. Nobody was expecting the groom to come out when he came out. But when he did, they needed to be ready. Bridesmaids asleep, all of them. And then all of a sudden this shout comes and everybody has to spring back into action. They have to say, oh, he's ready, let's get out there. They need to get back out to the street. And when they go, five of them are good to go. They can refill their lantern because they had the oil. All they got to do is light it and they're good. But the other five, they have nothing to light. Their oil has run out. They are not prepared. They are caught off guard and they have nothing that they can do. So notice with me in this story that at the beginning, all the bridesmaids had oil. It's quick to go to the end and say, don't be like the five that weren't prepared, and we'll get there. But at the beginning, everybody had oil. Everybody was prepared. Everybody was excited. Everybody was looking for the groom. Everybody was had their eye on the door ready for the groom to come out. Everyone was excited. Everyone was ready for this wedding to happen. All was well. And that mirrors so many of us. Mirrors so many of us that you become a Christian, you start to follow Christ, and there's so much excitement, there's so much passion, there's so much that you're ready to learn. But then, as time goes on, the things of life begin to creep in, the things of life begin to push and to prod, the things of life begin to kind of take over. And as that happens, you kind of forget just a little bit. That initial feeling kind of wears off just a little bit. Your commitment to Christ begins to wane just a bit because these other things get to be more important. So my question to you this morning is, if you have come to Christ, if you have made that commitment to follow Him, have you continued to pursue Jesus? Have you continued to make your heart ready for Him? Or did you get excited about a wedding, run out with your lantern half full, get bored, and then move on to something else? That's the point of Jesus' parable. You say, well, hang on just a minute. I thought once saved, always saved. I thought that's how that worked. I thought once you started, then you're good. Once saved, always saved. And yes, that is absolutely true. That is very much a fundamental doctrine of our faith. But it isn't once excited, always excited. That's not the same thing. Jesus wants to drive home that in order to be ready, the true follower of Jesus will continue to make his heart ready and prepare himself for that day. If you are following Christ, you can't come and just say, here I am, all is great, and then 2, 3, 4 months later, wait a minute, there's other things in life that are now more important. That's not what it means to be a follower of Christ. So if you consider yourself a Christian this morning, is your life marked by your heart's desire to be ready for that final day? Have you prepared your heart, or are you just kind of winging it and hoping that you'll make it? Once saved, always saved is not a doctrine about buying insurance so that whenever that day comes, you're good, and you can just pull this insurance policy out of your pocket and say, I'm taken care of. It should say something more like, once saved, always pursuing. That's a better way to say that. Once saved, you are always pursuing. There are seasons in life where things may be rough and your passion and your emotion may not be what it was, but you're always pursuing after Christ. Is that your testimony this morning? Don't take your perseverance for granted. Pray that God will keep you. Make your heart ready. And then work accordingly. And I want to be careful. I don't want to diminish grace in any way this morning. The role of grace in our lives is powerful because it should be what motivates us and what pushes us to work. But we cannot earn Jesus' approval here. But this story makes it clear that we have to work. And we have work to do if we are to be prepared. Grace doesn't eliminate our need to work. Grace doesn't eliminate our part in our sanctification and becoming more like Him. Work will always be a part of the Christian walk. I've been listening to a biography of a guy named Bill Bowerman. He's the legendary track coach at the University of Oregon and really the founder of Nike. He's the guy that created the shoes and all this, everything you know about Nike. He's the guy that got it started, this tremendous track coach. If you've been watching any of the track and field stuff that's been on here recently, they always have the national championships in Oregon at Bowerman Field and do the everything there. So it's been about this guy, Bill Bowerman, and He tells the story, all of his runners tell this story, that as long as he was coaching, he would put his players to the test. If they started whining about how they were being coached, if they started complaining about the race he wanted them to run in, if they were complaining about his methods and the way that he did things, he would challenge them and he would invite them to race him. And he would say, "You are welcome to do whatever you would like in your coaching plan if you can beat me in a race." But then he would go on and he would say, "But here's the rules to the race. You're not allowed to look behind you at any point. If you look behind you at any point, you are immediately disqualified and you lose." Well, all of his guys knew that he was just going to cut across the infield and he was going to beat him. But they couldn't look back to see that he was doing that, to call him out on it, because that meant immediate disqualification. Unfortunately, I think many of us are living our Christian lives that same way. We're saying, "Jesus, I'm good, I'm right here behind you," and you're hoping that at the end you can kind of cut across the infield just to get ahead. Bill Bowerman never lost a race to anyone, but he never raced anybody either. And for us, too many of us, we think that we've won the race simply because we started the race. That is not what we have been saved for. We have been saved to run the race and to finish the race. Simply because we started it doesn't make us victors. So that's the first story that we have here. Now let's read through the second story in Matthew chapter 25. It's a little bit of a different take. It's a little bit of a different picture that we have, but it's going to be driving home the same point. Verse 14. "For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his ability. And then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also the one who had 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, 'Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more.' His master said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master.' And he also who had the 2 talents came forward, saying, 'Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more.' His master said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master.' He also who had received the 1 talent came forward, saying, 'Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours.' His master answered him, 'You wicked and slothful servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." So it's a harsh text. I've taught on this text a lot during my time here at Providence, so I'm not going to linger on it. I'm not going to go through and break it down detail by detail. But quickly, I think you can see the same type of theme coming out in this story that Jesus is telling. You've got these 3 guys. One does nothing, one does a little bit, and one does a lot. The master returns, and these guys are suddenly called to account for what they've done. That's the emphasis of the sermon here. That's the story that he's telling. That's the emphasis of what he's going for, is that they are suddenly called to account for what they've done. It's the same theme. What you do in your life matters. To quote from one of my favorite movies, from Gladiator, "What you do in life echoes in eternity." That is a true enough statement for us. The master goes one by one through each man, asking them what they've done with the sum that they had been given. What did they do with it? One guy had done well, worked hard, made money. That man lived for the day that master would return. He didn't know what day it was, but he knew the master would come back. And so he wanted to make sure he was prepared to give what he needed to give on that day. He lived his life preparing for the moment the master would return. He lived each day with the end in mind. Each day was governed by the last day. This middle guy handled himself well. He made some money, did some work, things that come back well for him as well. But then there was this final guy, and he didn't do a thing. Calls him the slothful servant. He was lazy. He took the stuff. He assumed that the master was going to be harsh. He assumed that if something bad happened, things would go really bad for him. So he goes and he digs a hole in the ground and he puts it in the ground. And he did nothing. He was able to go out. He was able to party. He was able to do whatever he wanted during the time that the master was gone. Live life as if there were no concerns. Live as if the master were never going to show up. Live as though he was never going to be asked the question, what did you do with what I gave you? The point here is that not that we need to earn the master's favor by making enough money. The point here is that is not that we need to make the master happy by doing enough things. The point is twofold. One is that the master has given us something. And then using it and working with it is what honors the master. To not work, to not care for it, to not cherish the gift is to dishonor the giver. I mean, think about this. Think about when you were dating. If you got a girlfriend and you're dating your girlfriend, or you're dating your wife, if you gave your wife a necklace for a birthday, right? You spent a long time, you picked it out, you spent a lot of money on it, and you got this necklace, and she opens it, she's like, oh, it's great, I love it. And then a week later, you happen to see on eBay that necklace, right? What does that say about the status of your relationship? If you don't know, you will be single very soon, just so you know. It means that she doesn't value you very much. Even if she doesn't like the necklace, she should at least value the giver enough to take care of the gift. And that is the point. Is that if you have been given something, whatever that something is, maybe it's money, maybe it's time, maybe it's youth, maybe it's friendships, maybe it's a marriage, maybe it's kids, maybe it's a church, maybe it's all those things. If you have been given something, you will be judged for how you handle it. And if you dismiss it, if you ignore it, if you put it off and pretend that it's not there, you will dishonor the one who gave you those good gifts. It's not simply that you dishonor that one thing. It's that you dishonor the one who gave it to you. This servant did not honor the master, did not honor what the master had given him, and by proxy, he did not honor the master. The second point Jesus is making, and really the main point, is that there's a day the master will come back and he will say, what did you do with what I gave you? What did you do with what you've had? That day will come. And on that day, we will want to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. But that pronouncement can only come if we live each day now with that final day in mind. With that final moment in mind. But for so many of us, we live today with today in mind. The goal is just to make it to bedtime tonight. The goal is just to make it through the day. All you've got in mind is the nap you're going to take this afternoon, the pool you're going to be at this afternoon. And listen, I understand. I have those things in mind too. Those things are fine. Those things are good. But those things have to be in light of where you're going in life. That can't be the sum total of what you're pursuing. You can't be just about pursuing the lake, just about pursuing fun, just about pursuing money or careers or whatever it is that you're pursuing. You have to live with the last day in mind. Let's go back to that picture that we started with here. Let's go back to the tornado and this guy mowing down here. This guy is a perfect representation of how most of us live our lives, myself included. There is looming this day that is coming, and it is closer than any of us would like to imagine. Yet we're so consumed with the things of this life and the things of this world and the stuff that we feel like we gotta do, the stuff that we feel like is so important, the stuff that becomes the priority for us. We're so consumed with those things that we don't stop to pay attention and look over our shoulder and realize, hey, there's a tornado right behind us, right? We don't stop and realize, hey, the master is coming back and he's going to call me to account. We don't stop and say, wait a minute, there's something else bigger going on here than mowing the yard. We just kind of keep on keeping on. And we're going to live life as if nothing's going to happen to us. Meanwhile, our ultimate day of judgment, when we sit before God's throne, is right over our shoulder. We have got to start living our lives with that final day in mind. And that day is more important than all of our other days combined. Will you be ready for that day? Will you be ready when the Master returns? This is Jesus' point in these two parables. Will you be prepared, or will you be too busy out doing what you do? Will you be too busy out just doing stuff? Will you be too busy pursuing the things that this world says you need all these things so you can be ready for that day? Can I tell you, when that tornado hits that house, the grass is going to get mowed. The grass is going to get mowed along with the house and everything else around it. And so it is with us. These things that are so important for us, these things that consume so much of our hearts and so much of our minds, that we have so much anxiety about, so much that we worry about, those things are going to be leveled. They're going to be wiped out. And there's going to be one question that's going to matter. Did you love Jesus? And did you allow him to stand in your place for your sins? Or did you just keep living your life, doing your thing? All that stuff that you worry about, it's going to be eliminated in a moment, in the blink of an eye. So what are you focused on today? What are you worried about today? How are you preparing yourself today? What has God called you to today? And what are you doing with what you've been given? That's the question that has to be on your mind when you wake up in the morning, when you go to bed at night. What have I done with what I've been given? And praise God for grace and forgiveness whenever we fail and we mess up and we're so distracted. But our hearts, we must be moving toward pursuing him and knowing him and growing in him. Will you pray with me? Father, I thank you for these stories, for this text that tells us to be ready, that you give us warning, that you say, behold, I'm coming soon. I will return. None of us on that day should be able to say, we didn't know. We weren't ready. We weren't prepared. We didn't know we were going to be given account. We didn't know you were going to judge us. We didn't know you were going to call this on us. We didn't know you were going to do these things. We can't say that. Because we've been warned. Father, may we be like the bridesmaids who were ready, who came prepared. May we be like the servant who was faithful with little. And Father, just make us faithful servants, that all of us in here could hear one day, well done, good and faithful servant. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.